When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Does picking an outfit have you running a little too fashionably late? We get it. Great taste takes time. That's why Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery, has your back with the largest selection of beer, wine, and spirits delivered in under 60 minutes. Convenience never goes out of style. So if you need to spend some extra time in the mirror instead of at the store, download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today.
Hey guys, I know that this is the top of the episode, so I just want to tell you guys, this is what we call a slap nuts episode. A slap nuts episode is a little bit different than other episodes, and we kind of get into this a little bit later because we talk about different things, not just one particular person. It's sort of a way for you guys to take a break from all the gloom and doom that we normally have on this podcast and have a little fun. But that being said, we might have dirty jokes, differing opinions, talk about more adult themes, and there might even be some cussing because the fact is, two out of the three hosts on this show do a heavy amount of drinking, and the other one is a loose cannon from birth. So, you know, just a little bit of warning that if you have little ears in the car, this might not be the episode that you want to introduce them to us to. So there you go. You might not want to have kids in the car when you play this episode. Just ever. Ever.
You're digging the Rock and Roll Heaven podcast with LD, Will the Thrill, and TJ2.
Hey guys, welcome to Rock and Roll Heaven, the podcast where we talk about the life, careers, and deaths of famous musicians. I am your host, LD. Along with me for the ride, as always, is Will the Thrill.
Greetings and salutations.
Nice. Ooh, nice.
What are you drinking?
This also comes from our friends at Belching Beaver.
They're not our friends. You don't know anyone that works there.
I'd like to. Maybe okay. I'm just putting that out in the universe.
Okay.
Anyway, this comes from the Belching Beaver Brewery. It is the Good Morning Beautiful Brown Ale.
Aw, my hair is brown.
So that is what I'm imbibing for this particular episode.
All right. And then on the other side of the country, we have TJ2, the Deuce.
Howdy, partners.
Did you just give up on drinking?
No, I kind of wasn't paying attention, and I already opened my beer. So very poorly timed.
Here you go.
Oh, did someone open a beer?
Like it was...
It's like we all auditioned for that role in the guy in Police Academy and none of us got it.
Dang.
All right. What are you drinking, T?
I'm having I've had this one before on the show, Leinenkugel Toasted Bock. Very, very, very wintry.
That's a safe bet for you though, right?
Yes. I like Bock very much.
Is that correct? It's the one with spices?
I like beer just in general. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not really picky.
This beer thing is a wonderful
one. One day you're going to say, no, DJ to the deuce. And you're going to hear like a loud crack. And then I'm just going to scream, PBR, bitches. Woo.
Nothing beats the ice house, though. That was fantastic.
That truly suffered for my craft. Not going to lie.
Hats off to your dedication. Well,
it was like the Rixtacy, like when Will had to drink the Rixtacy. Still have the banana liqueur up there?
There is banana liqueur that's been in there since the Rixtacy episode. I don't know what to do with it.
You throw it away at this point.
I'm going to. God. Oh. Haunts my dreams.
I need some potassium, though, but also I don't want to get drunk.
Yeah, that's not the way to go.
All right.
And if you do, please, and if you're going to, please don't do so on banana liqueur.
Yes, your teeth will rot before you get intoxicated.
All right. So this week, guys, is our slap nuts episode. This is an episode where we get to talk about some stuff, blow some steam off, and just, you know, have conversations that don't end with someone, for the most part, dying.
We hope not.
But this wheel of what the fuckery. Guess is 1980s epic sex solos. That's the first thing. The second thing we're going to talk about is favorite quit or got fired. And then the third thing up this time around is we're going to talk about, and then this is where we're going to get the hate mail. Mm-hmm. We are going to compare and contrast songs that are covers that are better than the originals. So at the top of the every episode, I got to tell you guys, anytime there is a Slap Nuts episode, the views expressed on this Slap Nuts episode of Rock
are and correct. Don't argue with us. We're right 100% of the time.
It's not Pantheon Media that has these views. It's just
us. It should be.
We're the jerks.
But we're right, damn it.
All right. So first up, guys, we are going to be talking about the epic saxophone solos of the 1980s because Will will not leave me alone until we do this.
But I just want to point out something about 1980s sax in particular.
It's terrible.
Oh, do you stop it? There's a lot of good stuff in here. And I, for the record, have a lot of noteworthy notes.
So
about
you,
this.
Yes.
You spent more time. But
we really had no parameters for this one other than, hey, 80s sax. So I have like a list of 10 great ones and 10 that suck.
Okay, that's fair. But before I go further, to give a context, if you will, the 1980s really mastered the saxophone riff, very much like a guitar riff. The 80s had saxophone riffs. So I want us to keep that in mind and part of the conversation as we segue into this material where we enjoy the good and the bad.
Not how you pronounce that.
It is now, because we're always right, TJ said.
No, it's segue like the awesome little scooter thing. Happy was on it. No, Obadiah was on it. Obadiah Stane.
That's an MCU reference for those people. Yes, 80s saxophone riffs. So think about that. There might be one in some of the songs we talk about today.
All right.
So we'll see.
I mean, I hope that they are, because isn't that the whole point of the list?
I think that since, TJ, you have a top 10, basically, I think we should start there.
Okay. Start.
Okay. Do you want my top 10 good ones or cheesy / suck ass ones?
Let's do the good ones.
Let's do the good ones. Just the good ones. Yeah. How about just the good one?
Okay. At number 10, I've got The Waitresses, I Know What Boys Like.
Yes. Good one. Now,
to me, that sax solo sounds like if a gallon of Tab and a kilo of Coke could somehow play a saxophone, that's what it would sound like.
You mean the 80s?
Yes.
They also had use of the saxophone during Christmas wrapping.
Yes, but that's one I really like.
Okay.
And it's frenetic and crazy, and I really dig that one. Number 9, this is a song from someone we have covered during our Heavy Hitter series, Rick James, Super Freak.
Yes.
Played by Daniel Lamel, of course. He gets a little shout out right before he starts playing with Rick saying, "Blow, Danny." So that's a really good one. I didn't feel like this list of good 80s sax would be complete if I didn't put The Big Man on here. So now I think we can agree that if we were doing sax, just any sax solo of all time, Clarence Clemons would probably have about 3 of the top 6.
Easily.
I mean, Born to Run, I think we can all agree that would be there. Jungle Land, Probably Would, Rosalita. He's got a bunch of killer ones. But we're in the 80s, so I just picked a song I happen to really like called Cadillac Ranch.
That's a good one because I mean, just to add to a little bit, well, the one I had in mind was actually from Born in the USA, would be Bobby Jean.
That's another good one. Yep.
And when I looked at it, what I realized with Big Man was a lot of the sax stuff I enjoyed by him was actually the 70s, and then it came back in the 90s. The 80s were a bit of a gap.
Yep.
Because what Springsteen was releasing, he released, I think, 4 albums in that decade. So
he did. And you know, he broke up the E Street Band for a while.
Basically, yeah. So,
yeah. And I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, LD, I'm sure you would know this. Am I right that Clarence's final performance was on Lady Gaga's Born This Way or something?
I do believe it was.
Okay.
And he apparently flew out at like 3 in the morning and did it and came back. And I think, it was the last thing he did before he passed.
Yeah. And as we're recording this, we're 5 days removed from what would have been his 80th birthday, actually. So
hats off, Big Man.
Still RIP to that guy. What a force of nature he was. Number 7, a little more mellow, you know, because Clarence, he had the lungs. It sounded like it was going to explode out of your speakers. This one's a little more laid back, but I know it's one you like, Will. Dire Straits, Your Latest Trick.
Love it. The only thing that beats it, and it's in the wrong decade, is On Every Street.
Yes, because that you're just into the 90s with that one. Yep.
Yeah, that little hook in Your Latest Trick is just, it's so infectious and just wonderful.
I love that. I love that one. And it's a little bit of a departure for them, but it's a terrific song. I really love it. Number 6, I've got Stevie Winwood, Roll With It.
Good choice.
All right.
Nice.
Number five, I don't think we could do this list if we didn't throw Hall & Oates on here. I picked Maneater. You could pick a bunch of those.
My Hall & Oates.
Yeah, we have a little bit of overlap.
Okay. Well, that's okay. That's all right. Number four, I have got Lonesome George and the Delaware Destroyers, Bad to the Bone.
Ooh.
It's iconic for sure.
That's in the Clarence pantheon of just God, you just that just pops out of your speakers. I love that song.
Yeah.
And again, you could pick a lot of George songs. I Drink Alone would be another good one. Might actually be a better one. Now that I think about it. We'll stick with Bad to the Bone. Number three, and boy, these top three, man, they're really hard to separate, but I've got Carter Rock and Roll, Huey Lewis and the News, because it's Huey Lewis and the News.
I would say I Want a New Drug.
I Want a New Drug. I see, again, this is, there's a ton. Back in Time would be great.
Nope.
Shut up. Shut
a
up.
A bunch of them.
Shut up.
Okay.
Shut up, Mike. Number two, I've got another band who you could pick a lot of songs by them, but I'm going to go with this one, NXS, What You Need.
Oh.
And number one for me, is very early in the decade, played by a star, I believe, of the 60s and 70s, but it's Foreigner with Urgent featuring Junior Walker.
Oh, okay. They use that in a Sprint commercial, I think.
For Urgent?
I think so. It's turned up in a lot of some commercial here fairly recently, but good grief, man. Junior just, he absolutely decimates that solo. Killer, killer stuff. Love that one. So that's my good list.
All right, just why don't you run through your bad list?
This is my butt cheese / sucky list. Number 10, I've got Harden My Heart by Quarter Flash.
Oh, I love Quarter Flash.
Oh, so do you like that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
They played, okay, so of course, like, my mind will always go to Broadway musicals, and they used that song as the second act I Wish song for Rock of Ages.
Okay. Okay. I think we can agree, though, a song can be cheesy and still be good.
Of course, yeah.
I love cheesy songs.
Yeah, some of these are bad. Some of them are just cheesy, and that's not a terrible song or anything. It's just that's a very generic sounding sax to me.
Okay.
So's the one at number nine. Breathe, Hands to Heaven.
I'll give you that.
Oh, tight.
No. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't sing anymore. Sorry. Even for comic effect.
I was doing the Larry King. Breathe for the full hour.
Tight. Breathe.
You guys are going to just snap at me every time, aren't you?
Yeah, we're not going to put this down.
I think I'm going to get some blowback on this one, but I don't care. It's a good song, and the artist is, she's very iconic. The sax in this song sucks. Sade, Smooth Operator.
And fair enough.
It's sophomoric. Yeah.
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 Her voice sounds like butter.
Oh, she's
brilliant. Amazing.
Yeah. She is beautiful and super talented and everything. But yeah, that's just the sax is not good in the Smooth Operator, in my opinion. I got Funky Town.
Oh, lip sync.
Which it took me till today to realize that lip sync.
Yeah.
Slip sync. Ha. Huh? So we're seeing it. I don't know.
Oh my goodness. My sax.
The next one is just a song I really don't like, and that would be An Englishman in New York by Sting.
I don't even know if I know that song.
It's not a great song.
Don't know if I know that song. I feel like our show.
When Sting slows it down and gets the horns and the kind of like jazzy feel to songs, I run real hot and cold on them. Okay, for example, I adore Fields of Gold. I love that song. Love it. An Englishman in New York is... It's a turd on an English muffin. I hate it. An English muffin. See, I didn't mean to, because he's English.
I see what you did there.
I also like English muffins. So can you pick something else like raisin bagels or something?
It's ferret scat on a buttermilk biscuit. Okay. It's really bad. I really do not like that song.
I mean, I'm shocked how quickly you came up with that analogy, and I'm impressed. Duly impressed.
I'm going to roll these last five off just rapid fire, because to me, this is about a five-way tie for the cheesiest, and I would love for you guys to break it.
Okay.
Waiting for a Star to Fall by Boy Meets Girl.
Let him finish. Jeez. Also, that was super loud, like right in my ear.
I, That was actually the desired reaction, I have to be honest with you.
You mentioned Boy Meets Girl.
Glenn Frey's The One You Love. A contribution from the misses. Debbie Gibson's Foolish Beat. Wham's Careless Whisper. And Kenny G's Songbird.
Okay.
I'm gonna tell you flat out, Kenny G does not belong on that list. Kenny G is the master of sax.
You're taking him off.
All right.
Yeah.
Taking him off. That's because Kenny G, you can't think about Kenny G without thinking about the saxophone. So literally everything he does is either super or cheese. And I like to think he's super.
Well, that one is kind of cheesy. I would also say that, do you know who plays the sax on that, the Sting song that I called like Poop in a Biscuit or whatever it was?
I think you said ferret scats
on a
buttermilk biscuit.
On a buttermilk biscuit. Thank you very much. Do you know who plays sax on that one?
Who?
Branford Marsalis.
Get out of here.
So, I mean, it's not like some no name. I mean, it's somebody who's a fantastic player. I just don't like it. But anyway, you're taking Kenny G off the list. Okay.
Yes. Simply because that's his thing, man.
Okay.
That's what he does, man.
It's Uncle Kenny, man.
So okay. I'm going to knew you were waiting for me. Waiting for a Star to Fall is the number one cheesiest one on your list.
The ultimate.
Okay. Will, what do you think?
Is the cheesiest? Oh, probably Waiting for a Star to Fall. It's so schmaltzy.
Yeah.
I started looking at that list and I was like, I actually had that one lower, but I really started thinking about it. I was like, no, that might actually be the one.
that
might have been the one that I could have just read and saved us the last 15 minutes.
It is so just iconic cheese for 80s sax. I mean, and that's what makes it brilliant.
Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. So anyway, that's my top and bottom 10.
Love Excellent. It. Excellent. I guess I'm up.
Hey, you're up and I'll back quick. Yeah.
All right. So I was actually going to choose Tina Turner's You're Simply the Best. But the thing is that saxophone solo only lasts about 10 and a half seconds.
Okay.
It's pretty short. Now, it does show up on best saxophone solos in music, but for some reason, it's just super short, in my opinion. So I felt like I needed something that was a through line. So I'm a massive fan of Deadpool. So I actually chose one to be Careless Whisper.
It's iconic.
By Wham. If you've not seen Deadpool, which I know my brother probably doesn't even know what Deadpool is, but I feel like that's a movie that T would actually love.
That's a big raw joke, Ghost Rider.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with Careless Whisper. I'm also going to pick Rio by Duran Duran.
That's a good
one. Oh, yeah.
Another one that I chose was, I went with Huey Lewis in the News. And the one I went with was Back in Time. Because I used to actually work at Universal Studios. And you know, they had the Back to the Future ride. But that got gutted to become something else, like the Spider-Man or something. The Simpsons or the Mummy or something. It got gutted. But still, they would actually play Huey Lewis and the News constantly while I worked at Universal. And it was just like that end part of Back in Time.
The sax is rocking,
That part, yeah.
That's a really long solo, too.
Yes, it is.
It kind of tails out at the very end of the song. I really like that one.
Yeah. The other one that I chose was because knowing that this exists in the world, and knowing that I have access to it pretty much anytime I want makes me super happy. So I'm going to go with Maneater by Hall & Oates. Now, if you don't know what I'm referring to, hang on. There is a hotline that you can call called Call & Oates.
Which we called during the Eddie Van Halen series, as I recall.
Yes, we did. Call & Oates. If you guys are interested in it, you can call this number at any time, day or night, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. 366 on leap years, and you can actually choose out of three different Hall & Oates songs. And you know what? I'm going to give out that number again because I feel like the universe needs to know about Hall & Oates. But you call this number, and you can just select any song one of three songs or four songs by Hall & Oates, and you can listen to them anytime you want. And that number is 719-266-2837. Again, that is 1-9-266-2837 if you just want to bring joy into your life. Or if you have somebody that's really annoying you at the bar and they want to get your number, just give that to them. And then they'll be like, oh, this is great. They didn't give me like an 888, whatever. No, you can call Colin Oates. It's so I chose Man Eater because it just brings me joy. Now, what's the other one that you make my dreams come true? That doesn't have any sax really in it. So I couldn't choose that, but that's my favorite. That's my favorite song by them. All right. For my final selection, I'm actually going to try to make my mama proud by choosing Hungry Eyes from the Dirty Dancing soundtrack.
Do you know, I thought about that one. I waited. I didn't know which list it should go on.
It's transcendent.
It's either really cheesy or really amazing. Awesome.
I'm not sure which. Do you remember the video?
No. Yeah. No.
The girl is playing this gigundous saxophone. This is like as big as she is. Oh. And her dress is lit clean up to glory. Like, it's the most...
Does it have like a tiny chain on the hip keeping it together?
Like, it was really, like, it's like you almost feel like you're seeing something. I'm sure you're not, but... Yeah, all just right. Watch it when we're done. You'll see.
All right. I will. So that's my list. Mr. Will the Thrill, this was your selection. It was. So this better be some damn fine sax.
It is some very impressive sax. And I will preface this list by saying I'm ashamed of all of you because I'm going to bring some up here that you have overlooked. And I am disappointed.
Look, he chose 20. I picked like 4.
I'm not angry.
There's no consistency here.
I'm not angry. I'm disappointed.
You know what?
Oh, there's a spray bottle again. Okay. So I'll try to just breeze through at least the ones we've shared. And that would be, of course, Clarence the Big Man Clemens.
Yep.
Can't talk about the instrument without talking about good old Clarence. Did we all overlook Glenn Frey? The heat is on. You belong to the city.
I assumed you were gonna pick any of these in Beverly Hills.
You'll see now. I did pick a Fry song, but I did it for my cheese list.
You did it for the cheese list. But Heat Is On and You Belong to the City. I mean, come on, that lick is undeniable. With Huey, I went for I Wanted a Drug, but as we discussed, we got a lot of options there.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Men at Work.
I thought about that one. I thought on that one long and hard, and I left him off primarily because I know you like Colin Hay a lot, and I figured you would pick one.
As I do. And you know, really, I think Who Can It Be Now is the most recognizable, but yeah, the sure. entire catalog, I mean, Underground, Overkill, all really yep. good sax work.
Do they have something like The Middle as a song?
But LD, how'd you miss Modern Love?
I didn't.
Oh. Okay.
I didn't.
Okay.
It was, the thing is, it's so in the back. Now, if I actually wanted to choose a mm-hmm. great saxophone solo, mm-hmm. it would be in a song that my brother hates.
Which is
Black Star.
Ugh.
It's a good sax solo, though.
Yeah, it's a beautiful sax solo. And
I'm going to be honest with you. I remember as I put my list together thinking like, okay, I need to put Modern Love on there. And somehow it's just not on there. So I don't know. But it got mentioned, so
good. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Black Star is undeniably like that's my choice.
But as LD taught us all in the Bowie series, that was his first instrument, correct?
Yes.
Sax?
Yeah. Yep.
It was a virtuoso.
Maybe for the next list we have to pick something like best flute solos.
Oh boy. Jethro Tull.
I was gonna say Jethro Tull. Oh, and Jethro Tull and Marshall Tucker, I guess.
No, Dave Matthews has an amazing one too. And so does Lizzo. Lizzo plays the flute.
Flute solo?
Yes.
Great.
Hey. All right.
Brass Monkey.
Okay, gonna admit, yep. I forgot that was a saxophone.
Well, you heard that.
It's just you just don't expect it to be in a Beastie Boys song. And for some reason, like that was, yep. I completely forgot about that. Well done.
The melodious True Spandau Ballet.
That was on my list, and then I took it off because I remembered every time I see Spandau Ballet, I think, you know what? All the members of Spandau Ballet could walk up to me and punch me in the face, and I would be like, why are these guys punching me in the face?
Exactly. And I think I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up one of my favorites, thankfully, not a subject for our podcast yet, Billy Joel.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of his stuff in the 70s was more sax heavy with Mark Rivera, obviously his sax player of many years, but just making the cut for the 1980s would be, and I think it's memorable, it's still rock and roll to me.
Fair enough.
Really good solo.
Well, he also
That is a good solo. Right. You're right.
Keeping the Faith also, which was later in the decade.
Yeah.
But I think the big ones like New York State of Mind and Just the Way You Are, that's all
70s. Oh, Just the Way You Are.
But
yeah.
That one's beautiful.
Yeah.
Again, the great Mark Rivera, Billy Joel's go-to sax guy. For, of course, had In Excess, but I actually had Never Tear Us Apart.
Hard to go wrong with pretty much anything from them.
Mm-hmm.
Especially anything from Kick.
Oh, yeah, the album is pretty much flawless, in my opinion.
Fair.
And why we're all here, my number one, LD's already getting angry at me. Many of you have seen the film Lost Boys and asked yourself the question, who is that oiled up dude playing a saxophone? Well, I'm here to give Tim Capello his due, because nothing like that image of that guy playing the sax is more 80s than anything else we've discussed. So
I don't know why I haven't filed for divorce.
I am going to bring up a few fun facts about Tim Capello. Ready?
Is it fun facts? Nipples are pierced.
Fun facts
is
about Tim Capello.
He has to get oiled up to put on his leather pants. I mean, his man bun is greater than Jason Momoa's. What could you possibly tell me about him that I can't figure out?
How about this? He kicked heroin.
Good for him, because the only other option is death.
Yeah. He actually kicked heroin, according to Capello. He said he quit, quote, cold turkey.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's impressive that he didn't die.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's a reason that you have to wean yourself off slowly, because if you just stop, unfortunately, one of the symptoms or side effects is that you just die.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
successfully overcame the addiction himself.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
He was the go-to sax player for Tina Turner, which I think we discussed.
I knew. Yes. Yeah. I knew.
Other notable acts include, but not limited to, Eric Carmen, Ringo Starr, Peter Gabriel, Carly Simon, Billy Crystal.
Wait.
Yep.
Billy One Crystal. Of these things is not like the other.
It's not like them at
Care
all.
Care to explain why Billy Crystal is in here? What did he do?
He was touring with Billy Crystal.
That is weird.
I know, is that weird?
That is so weird.
But
it is like, oh God, what was the band that he was touring with? David Bowie, and he was the mime.
T-Rex.
T-Rex, yeah.
Yeah, so it was like when David Bowie would be touring with T-Rex and he was a mime.
Yep.
Okay. So he's Billy Crystal's mime.
Billy Crystal's mime. We can think of it that way.
All right.
Obviously became a
That's my new band name. Write that down.
Billy Crystal's mime.
Yep.
He obviously became a bodybuilder, founded the band The Ken Dolls. It was actually on the Tina Turner tour that he was discovered for Lost Boys, which Capello describes as, quote, the easiest work he ever did.
Yeah, you could tell.
He spent 20 minutes in costume, because he wasn't wearing a lot.
No, he's wearing leather pants. Yep.
He said they shot for maybe 2 hours, and, quote Capello, by 10 p.m., we were all partying back in Haim's room. Corey Haim.
Yeah, No, you didn't. You could have just said Haim.
Yep. And last but not least, LD, you'll appreciate this one. Do you remember the John Haim skit Sergio, where he's the topless sax player?
No, I don't.
They did a series of them where he like compels Andy Samberg to air sax inappropriately.
Okay, yeah, no, I've missed that completely. How did I miss that?
But it's John Hamm playing a shirtless sax player, and that was, of course, modeled after Tim Capello. And the song, of course, is "I Still Believe" from the Lost Boys soundtrack.
I am so disturbed that you know that much about Tim Capello.
Tim Capello.
All right. Well, Tim, if you're listening to this, you have a real fan in my husband.
Thank you, Tim. So that's my list.
All right. So next is a subject from my brother's perspective. That was actually Will the Thrill's choice, the epic saxophones of the 1980s. Mm-hmm. And then we got my brother's choice, which was T. Care to explain to the folks at home what you were selecting?
Sure. When we do these Slap Nuts episodes, we usually pick 3-4 topics, and most of them are about music, but we like to throw one in that's kind of unrelated, kind of a get to know your host sort of a thing. So I have a lengthy list of impressive I quits and got fireds, which is weird since I've worked at the place I work at now for 18 years.
And to be honest, there's one that me and Will will still quote to this day.
Yep.
So
one of your quit/got fired stories actually creeps into our daily life.
Well, that's actually one I'm going to share with you. That's one of my most famous stories. I have a couple of really good ones. I worked at a video store called Movies one time. And I had to work on like the first week of the NFL playoffs or maybe the conference championship game Sunday. And I really was really upset about it. And so I was scheduled to be off on Super Bowl Sunday. And this girl said, Hey, would you trade with me next week, next Sunday? I said, oh, no, the Super Bowl's in. My family does like a big thing. And then I jokingly said, I mean, I don't want to work when I'm scheduled to work, much less when you're scheduled to work. Ha ha. Well, she got mad and told the manager, and I was called into her office for a meeting. And she said, I heard that you said you don't like working here. And I said, well, you know, I did say that to what's your name out there. And I was joking. But now that you mention it. And then I kind of put my hands up and shuffled on out the door with a big old grin on my face. Just screw them. Another really quick one was I worked at a restaurant, my first ever restaurant.
Neither one of these stories is the ones that we quote.
No, these are both really short. Okay. I worked in a kitchen. Somehow they got away with paying me less than minimum wage. I'm not sure how that was legal. I made like $3 an hour.
Oh, I remember exactly why that was because before South Carolina didn't have the law that stated that you had, if you were in the service industry working, you got tips, you didn't have to be paid minimum wage because apparently your tips were logged in as your.
Right. Like but your I worked in the kitchen right. and never got a tip. So yeah, you remember. So they were really kind of fudging things to do that. But anyway, so that's part of the reason I don't feel bad about how I left. So I think I had not cleaned some appliance and they come in the next day and it reeked of fish. Because this wasn't the fish camp, but this was a place that served like fried catfish and stuff like that. Yeah. And so one of the owner's daughters who kind of ran the place was giving me a real tongue lashing. And she was like, you know, it's the little things that make a big difference. You got to pay attention to details. If you ever want to get anywhere in this business, little things are important. And I said, let me break some news to you. I don't want to get anywhere in this business. I said, in fact, I don't want to work the rest of this year. And I left.
Beautiful.
Hey, Travis, yes. Just want to stop you for a second. All right. We got some ads. We got to run them. Let's do this.
That cold case you're listening to? Nasty stuff. But you know what else is a crime? Missing even a moment of whatever you're doing to go on a drink run. Luckily, there's Drizly, the number one app for alcohol delivery. With Drizly, you can compare prices on the biggest selection of beer, wine, and spirits, then get them delivered in under 60 minutes. So download the Drizly app or go to drizly.com. That's drizly.com today.
And we're back.
All right. Let's get back into whatever it was we were doing when we left. Amazing. But my piece de resistance is that when I was working in radio, that is not the steadiest of employment. It certainly wasn't back at this point. So I'm bouncing, as they say in the song, town to town, up and down the dial. And I get to a point where I've basically burned every bridge at every radio station in the state of South Carolina. and in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. for good measure. And so the damnable hell of it is that like the water company and the phone company still expect you to pay your bill even when you don't have a job. And I'm like, come on, guys.
Yeah, that's a load of crap.
Cut me some slack. Yeah. So for a very brief time, I began working at a parts warehouse. Not even important that I say the name of it. But a parts warehouse in Spartanburg, South Carolina.
Yeah, people now, are Googling this, right now. Yeah.
This is actually not where I quit, but it is indicative of the fact that I was not long for this particular employer, okay? Yeah. So the manager of the place, they've hired me, and I've passed my P-test, and everything's great. And I show up 7:30 the next morning, eager to learn and start working. And the guy says, okay, yeah, this is a real easy job, man. All right, so there's a basket right here that sits on this desk. This is the orders basket. When we get an order, we put it in there. So you just pick the order up. You go through the warehouse. You find all the things that are on that order. You put them all in one box. You sit them here and you sit the order on top of it. And then you get the next one and you go do that. And I said, oh, okay, yeah, I think I can handle that. I said, hey, I do have a question though. I said, in lieu of there being a, an order in the basket. What do I do to pass the time? And because I'm legitimately wondering, like, okay, well, surely orders aren't going to come in hard and heavy all day, every day. There'll be sometimes I come back from pulling an order and there's nothing in the basket. So what am I supposed to do? I don't want to just stand around. But that's how I phrased it. In lieu of there being anything in the basket, what am I supposed to do to occupy my time? And the guy just stared at me and he said, "What?" And I thought maybe he had not heard me or something. And so I spoke a little louder. I said, "In lieu of there being anything in the basket." And he put his hand up like, "Stop." He said, No. "I heard what you said. I didn't understand." I said, "Oh, okay." He said, and then he pulls up my application where he saw that I had gone to college. He said, I'm sorry, college boy, Mr. Fancy Talking College Man. I don't know who Lua of is. You need to talk down where regular folks like me can understand you." And I said, "You know what, buddy? I apologize. I got a little too big for my britches there." When basket be empty, what me do then?
That is cartoon it's level amazing. Of villain.
Oh, God.
When basket be empty,
what me do?
What I mean, me do then?
If basket, if nothing in basket, what me do?
Classic.
Now, that actually wasn't, that was my first day, and I actually did work there for a good 2 weeks. But I think that the groundwork, I think that pretty well laid the groundwork for the miserable failure that was to come.
A long and glorious tenure of 2 weeks.
Fair enough.
So those are just three of my favorites. And God, I've got so many to pick from.
Okay. Do you think that you've quit more or gotten fired from more?
I've definitely quit more. Yeah. Okay. I've only actually really been fired once.
Yes.
I've worked at several places that went out of business or they laid people off, but actually fired, I've only been fired one time.
I think I've been fired twice.
Okay.
I think I've been fired twice. Every other place was like totally fine, but I guess now is a good time for me to tell my, since we're rolling into them.
Yep.
So one was when I was like 18, and then the other one was during the pandemic.
Oh, jeez.
not the shelter.
No.
So when I was 18, of course, I was like this stupid, bubble-headed, skinny, freaky person, and I got a job at a restaurant, and it was a chain restaurant, and it was not Applebee's. I actually, shout out to Applebee's. I loved my time as an Apple buddy. Okay. Loved my time at Applebee's. I ended up working like 7 different jobs at Apple. I was in the expo line. I was the host. I was a server. I worked as a dishwasher. I worked as a busser. I worked like the whole thing. We did I loved my time at Applebee's. Okay. That is not the one I got fired from. I will say it's in the same family, and it may or may not have a day of the week in its name. Where they had, where you had the fancy shirts and stuff. So I was like super stupid. You remember what I was like as a kid? I was hyperactive. I bounced off the friggin' wall. Like it was like constantly almost, a cry.
Almost literally, yes.
Yes. I was like just on a human sugar high. I was the embodiment of energy.
To this day, LD still has a small scar, I believe, on her chin. And where she wedged herself in like a door frame of the bathroom and then scaled to the top of it like a monkey.
Yep.
And fell off face first and hit her chin on this tile floor that was basically like jagged concrete.
Yep. That was pretty much it.
Yep. So that's pretty much LD. Yes. She was hyper.
I was super hyper. I was hyper hyper. I was a hypo hyper. I was, yes. So I thought it was somebody on like a television show or something that I had seen had done this joke called a moose lick. Do we all know what a moose lick is? It's basically where, hey, you say, "Hey, Will, you ever been kissed by a moose?" And I go, you go, "Mah," and then you lick them. Okay. So I was working as a hosting position at this restaurant, and it got into my head that I was like, I need to do a moose lick on someone because that's fucking hilarious. And it is Friday and it is slow. Oh, it was super slow.
Okay.
It was a super slow Friday. And I'm like, I'll pick up the joint. So this dude comes over that we had nicknamed Happy Richie. And I'm like, "Hey, Happy Richie, you ever been kissed by a moose?" And he's like, he looks at me like super weird. And he was an older man. He was like 20. And he goes, "No, what are you talking about?" And I went, "Meh." And then licked him. And apparently he didn't think it was as funny as I did. So I got called into the office on Monday when the bosses were back in, and I was told to clean my locker out because, yeah, he didn't think that was a very funny joke. So I no longer worked there. The newest one, the most recent time I got fired, was technically not my fault because the man was crazy. So I literally think I dodged a bullet. So I was working on this film as the second AD, and there is a gentleman in the music / film industry that most people regard as either a psychotic genius or just psychotic. There is no middle ground. And so the first day I walk in and he's screaming at his realtor because he didn't leave his wife the title to the house, and they were moving in and they needed that for some reason, for insurance purposes or something. And then he got off that phone call and started screaming into a completely different phone because he threw the other phone across the room, and he picked up someone else's phone and started talking to a house. But I don't know who he was talking to, if it was like his lawyer or his psychiatrist, but he was screaming that he wanted an Apache helicopter. For the moment, he just wanted an Apache helicopter, and he's like, buy me my effing helicopter. And in this time frame, he tried to, gosh, let me see what else he did. He was objectifying women, forced us to watch a sizzle reel of a vacation that he took, set to some super crappy music. He would scream at people because they didn't use the proper type of pen, because he didn't like people using Bic pens, because he says that was Bic was of the peasants. And then like most of the team that I got hired with was either fired or quit. And I made it all the way to a pre-production meeting where he was talking about, he was like, man, F COVID, we don't have to follow these stupid rules. Nobody's going to be doing anything. This is stupid. And then he started talking about the snacks. And so literally like on the Zoom call, I was like, hey, just want to let you know that we will need to just get prepackaged snacks. That is literally all I said. You would have thought that I called his daughter names because a couple minutes later, I get a phone call from the new first AD because the original first AD quit. And he's like, hey, he didn't like you talking about snacks. So we're going to have to let you go. During the time of a global pandemic, I told him we had to be safe. And
well, Amanda, you had it coming.
Yeah. Well, here's the funny thing. I found out later that the film got shut down because he didn't want to get proper permitting for the guns that he wanted to use.
Oh, good.
He was literally like, we don't have to tell the cops. We'll just use the ones we have. And I don't know if you know that or not. But that's highly illegal, and you can't really go forward on a film without an armor. We found out about that with Kalena Hutchins on the set of Rust, like how important an actual armorer is. And he didn't want to get the permits for the guns, and he didn't want to hire an armorer. And so at that point, if I had found out about that, I probably would have quit. But instead, I told him we had to get pre-wrapped peanuts, and he didn't like that. So I got let go. Now, I don't know if I've ever had like an epic quit moment. I did work at Victoria's Secrets for one day, and they showed me the video, you know, the training video that they show you, and like how to display the bras and hang them up and how to measure women. And I was like, nah, this job isn't for me. So literally the next day I was supposed to go in, and I called them and I told them that I broke my leg. And then a week later I worked at the same mall at the Philly's cheesesteak sandwich place. So yeah, that was I just discovered, like, it takes it, you know, like there are people that fit in really well at retail, and there are people that don't, and I do not fit in well at retail. I hate folding my own clothes, much less something else. Like, it's not even someone else's, it's a corporation's clothes. I just couldn't do it. So bless those folks who can actually do retail, because I do not have the strength and the will to be able to do it. I'm more of a restaurant gal, because you can always go into the walk-in freezer and cry if you need to. So, all right, now that I've shed my skin, Mr. Hickey, go for it.
Well, I'll give you one that I was a direct participant and another that I was sort of on the, we'll call it end user side of. So I worked at a specific location where I chose to vent my frustrations on social media.
MySpace.
Yes.
It was MySpace.
It was a nascent medium, to say the least. So I chose to put a very colorful post up there. And I think about a week went by, give or take. And then suddenly my manager calls us, hey, you know, we got to meet with you. Please don't. He basically said, please don't go this way, which is right past my coworkers. I'm like, oh, well, this can't be good.
Oh, no.
So I go into the room and it's my boss, his boss, his boss, and the HR manager. So you can imagine where this is going.
Oh, dear.
At which point they disclosed that there was a post located on social media.
And, MySpace.
Yes, on MySpace.
It was on MySpace.
I'm trying to be vague. and that, that's obviously, you know, can't befit the conduct of an employee. And, you know, it's a bad look for the company and that they would have to dismiss me. But I was an exceptional writer. And the funny thing is all the while they're sort of telling me the protocol and why they have to let me go, they'd interject like, there was this one thing about that. It was so well written, but we have to fire you. You know, this.
It is true. Will is an incredible writer. For those who don't know, number one, he does all of the write-ups for the episode. So if you ever look in the show notes, that ain't me writing that. That's Will, and he's doing it on the fly, and it's incredible.
Well, thank you. So I was told, you're a great writer. We have to fire you. So that's one I was a participant in. The other is a little more I found out about. It's one of my favorite stories from college. We were working on a film and we had like a radio that we would turn on, and suddenly one of the guys working on the film goes, hey, come here, check this out. And he turns on the radio and it's Tone Loc's Wild Thing. And I'm like, okay, that's funny. He goes, just wait. It rolls to Tone Loc's Wild Thing again. Then it does a brief station ID. It's like, okay, whatever, Attleboro, Massachusetts. And it does Tone Loc's Wild Thing again. So what I didn't know at the time was that this local radio station had basically cleaned house. They had gotten rid of everybody, reformatted, gutted the place. And so for a good, I'd say week or so, they were just running Wild Thing by Tone Loc and a station ID and commercials. And friends of mine had a bet in their dorm room. They would keep the radio on 24/7. And the last person to want to turn it off won.
Hilarious.
But fortunately, the station reformatted, and I think it was only on in their apartment for about 18 hours.
Aww.
But it was nothing but Wild Thing by Tone Loc, which is pretty funny. those are my stories, guys.
Excellent. I mean, I think that we've got, so you have been, have you quit or gotten fired from more jobs?
I've quit more. I've only been fired that one time. That's okay. The only time I've been fired.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I feel ashamed that I got fired twice. There's been a lot of production jobs and stuff like that, you know, so my job doesn't really lend itself to quote unquote being fired. Right. You just kind of work your contract out and they may or may not hire you again.
Yeah. And I've been laid off. I mean, that's a different kettle of fish.
Yeah. But I think I've quit more jobs than I've ever been fired from, but also like working the jobs I do, I'm in a weird position that neither of you guys is really into. My jobs just end.
Yeah.
Like I was a stand-in on Westworld and they wrapped the show. That's the end of the show. So it's really not quitting or getting fired. It's more finishing the job, I guess. So, all right. So the final one of our little conversations here is covers that are better than the originals. And this kind of came about because of our running gag that we have on the show. If you guys have listened to any of our episodes, you know that we have a running gag, and we'll get to that later, but it sparked a conversation about, you know, songs that are better, like covers that are better than the original. And so I'm going to go last because I went first in something. I don't know. So T, why don't you, because we're only going to play one of your choices, but we're going to play both versions of one of your choices. So you'll have to guide me on that.
Okay. Well, you told me to pick two, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So this was a difficult exercise. I'll tell you why. A, we all know there's something that's coming. Okay.
Yeah.
But you're kind of taking lead on this one. So I decided to leave that one alone. But then here are a couple of other things. One, most times if a song is remade, it has some redeeming qualities that made other artists want to cut it, right? So it's usually not terrible. So it's hard to pick one over the other. And then you have a lot of remakes that fall more into the category of, they're not better per se, but they're so different it's hard to judge them against one another. I'm trying to think of an example of that one. Like, you know, Prince has a great, a fantastic all-time immortal song called Purple Rain. Well, Dwight Yoakam did a bluegrass remake of it, and it's awesome, but it's awesome in a different way. They're very hard to compare. So
another one that's topical of the last series we did, Michael Jackson, was Chris Cornell covering Billie Jean.
Sure. Yeah.
And also Cyndi Lauper, one of Cyndi Lauper's seminal songs, Girls Just Want to Have Fun, was actually originally done by a guy named Robert Hazard.
Yep.
So one of her seminal feminine anthems was actually penned and recorded by a guy. And it was actually
which happens more than you might think.
Yeah, it does.
Because we discussed last year when Tom T. Hall passed away, he wrote Harper Valley PTA, which is a feminist anthem. If you go back a year and a half or so ago, John Prine wrote Angel from Montgomery from the perspective of a woman.
Yeah.
So that does happen a lot. Okay, but then you just kind of touched on something else that makes this hard. There are a lot of songs that aren't, the original artist isn't who you think they are.
Yeah.
Right. So like if I say I love rock and roll, most people are going to say, oh, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Nope, the Arrows.
Yep. Yep.
Or yeah. Come On, Feel the Noise. Oh, well, that's Quiet Riot. No, it's Slade. Sorry.
I mean,
Kim Carnes didn't do the first version of Betty Davis Eyes. So there's a bunch of these. So one of mine is probably going to piss a lot of people off. One of them is going to piss my cousin off really bad if he happens to hear this episode, but I'm just going to go with it. First one is I'm tackling the Beatles.
Okay, fair, go for it.
I think that Joe Cocker's remake of With a Little Help from My Friends is infinitely better than the Beatles.
100%.
Yes, absolutely. 100%. Absolutely. And yeah, you know what? Send us hate mail.
And the thing is, the Beatles version is what they intended it to be. I think it's a slightly throwaway-ish piece.
Yeah.
But it's obviously very well written because look what Joe was able to do with once he got his hands on it.
He crushed it.
I think also we have nostalgia and iconoclasty related to it because of the Wonder Years.
Sure.
That was our gateway to him. That's how we found out about the song. And it was
he did that with a lot of songs though, where he just packed them with so much soul and the explosive wild man annex on stage and stuff, but like he did that with The Letter, which I think the Box Tops did first.
Yeah, yes.
But that one, you know, came in through the bathroom window, all that stuff. And here's I didn't know this till the other day, and I heard this. This is, I think, a fun fact.
Fun fact.
When you see Joe Cocker going crazy on stage while he's singing, do you know what he's doing?
What?
He's playing the drums.
Ah,
is that what that is?
No, he's not actually playing them, but he used to be a drummer. So if you watch, what he's really doing is he's kicking the bass drum and he's hitting the hi-hat and he's hitting the snare.
Ha! I have literally never thought about that. Impressive.
I had not either until I heard that discussed, and I don't remember where I heard it in the last couple of days. And I just thought that was fascinating.
It makes sense.
And I also think that the Beatles crafted such perfect pop songs. They lend themselves to being to good remakes being made of them too. I think that's definitely because Stevie Wonder did what I've Got to Get You Into My Life.
Yes.
And it's fantastic. And I could name a bunch of them, but that's definitely.
But they wrote songs that were good enough to actually create at least two feature films that I can name right now, which is Across the Universe with Evan Rachel Wood. Mm-hmm. And then Yesterday. And I think it's Dev Patel. Is it Dev Patel? I'm going to kick myself. Yeah. Both of those are incredible. Hamish Patel. Mm-hmm. And they're both incredible films. Love them so, so much. But they use nothing but Beatles music to create a story. And it's awesome. So, I mean, like, I don't think you're far off with saying like that's how you can tell like they're great songs is because you can take them and form them and fit them and kind of bend and stretch them and make something new and interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I'm not going to be one who flings poop at the Beatles very much, but in this instance, I'm not really flinging poop. I'm just saying Joe's is better. I just think it is.
No, I think it's fair.
I agree.
Now, what is the play song that you have?
The what now?
The one that you want me to play. You said you picked two. So what's the other one?
Well, you know what? I'm going to lay my other one out on the table and we'll all decide as a group. How about?
Okay.
The other one, the original version is not tremendously well known, but it's well known enough that I feel comfortable putting it on there. And I love the original, but I got to hand it to Rod Stewart for his remake of Tom Waits' Downtown Train.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Oh.
So a couple of things right up front. Tom is a lot like Bob Dylan in that, A, he is a phenomenal songwriter, and Downtown Train is one of the, has, I think, maybe the best first line in the history of song. One of, for sure. But Tom's voice is a very acquired taste. Very. It is not instantly ear-pleasing the way Rod's is. So you take Tom's phenomenal, descriptive, colorful lyrics that just paint you such a beautiful, vivid picture, and you put them in the voice of Rod Stewart, and I think you've got gold there. Now, I like Tom's a lot, but again, his voice is not, it's not instant ear candy. And, okay, so you have this wonderfully cohesive song that goes from start to finish. At the end of his version, there's like a 30-second weird breakdown where he's like playing the accordion or something, and it just doesn't seem to fit to me.
Fair enough.
And whereas Rod takes it from start to finish, it's one cohesive thing, and he just sings the absolute hell out of that song. And it's one of my, that's actually one of my favorites, probably. So all respect to Tom. He's a fantastic songwriter. I happen to really like his version, but I like Rod's version a little bit more.
So while we're not going to play the whole song, we are going to just play a little bit of each song just for comparison. So first, of course, we'll go to Tom Waits. And then after that, we will hop over to Rod Stewart's version.
Okay. Make sure you get far enough into Tom that you actually hear him sing. That's important.
Fair enough. Yeah. Oh, okay. I know he sounds like he just gargled broken glass and
whiskey
alcohol.
And barbed wire. And yes, he does.
So here is Tom Waits with Downtown Train.
Punched a wall in the nighttime, yes. I climbed to the window and down to the street. I'm shining like a new dime. The downtown trains are full for all those Brooklyn girls. They try so hard to break out of their little worlds. Now you wave your hand and they scatter like. Have nothing that will ever capture your heart. They're just thorns without the rose. Be careful of them in the dark. Oh, if I was one, you chose to be your only one. Oh, yeah. Can't you hear me now? Can't you hear me now? I see you.
All right, so that is Tom Waits' Downtown Train.
Yeah. Tom sounds like he smokes cigarettes he makes himself out of asbestos tar paper and leaded gasoline.
All right, well, let's listen to someone who has a decidedly more smooth voice, and that is Downtown Train by Rod Stewart, and this is the 2008 remaster.
Outside, another yellow wing has punched a hole in the nighttime mist. I climb to the window and down to the street. I'm shining like a new dime. The downtown trains are full of all them Brooklyn girls. They try so hard to break out of their little world. You wave your hand and they scatter like crows. They have nothing that'll ever capture your heart. They're just thorns without the rose. Be careful of them in the dark. Oh, if I was the one you chose to be your only one. Oh, baby, can't you hear me now? Can't you hear me now?
Yeah, I will say that the difference between Tom Waits's version and Rod Stewart's version is that you can actually understand what Rod is saying.
That, yeah, no, you're not wrong. And what Rod is saying in the very first opening line is, outside, another yellow moon has punched a hole in the nighttime mist. God, oh, mercy.
Yeah.
What a freaking line.
It's great. It's a great song both ways. But yes, in that case, I fully agree. I think TJ gets a point. Yay!
Okay. Well, Will, what did you think on that one? I was just curious.
Of that choice?
Well, of Tom's version versus Rod's version.
I would prefer the Stewart version. It's also the one I know better. Like, yeah. For instance, I did not hear Tom's version until after I heard Rod, so it's very hard for me to sort of think of it the other way around.
Sure.
I think that's a lot. That's kind of a through line with a lot of covers that you didn't realize were covers. Yeah. Like, we were having a conversation about this. Do remakes count as covers when it comes from the same artist? Because we had a choice, because the thing is, if you go listen to Joni Mitchell's Both Sides now, the original version is this like up and poppy and happy version. And then the one that she records much later that they actually use in the film Love Actually is so much darker and moodier, and you feel the heartbreak. And so, you know, it's more learned. So it's like you've had that time to learn. Does that count as a cover because it's her own music, but it's coming from a completely different place? And it's completely different stylistically.
You cover your own song, basically?
Yeah, she covered her own song, but like, it's two totally different songs.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I could probably see it done that way. Although I would also just throw in, Alison Moore has a killer remake of that song. But
oh, does she?
But yeah, but if an artist takes one of their own songs and totally reimagines it, then I would think that probably counts. Yeah.
Okay. So that's an honorable mention from me, but we're actually going to move on to Mr. Will the Thrill for his choices.
All right. We're focusing on two, correct?
Just two.
Because good golly, this was a tough one. I had, my list is much longer than I'm going to share with you, just because there are so many, but
so many.
I've narrowed it down to two, and I figured I'll start by possible conflict with LD here. The song I picked is The Man Who Sold the World, performed originally by David Bowie and covered by Nirvana.
Now, the thing is, though, I can appreciate, because both of them were mine. Mm-hmm. Both of them were my subjects.
Kurt and David.
Yes,
yeah.
I covered both Kurt and David. And the thing is, I can appreciate where both of them came from, and I can appreciate the difference in style. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I can't see myself loving Kurt Cobain for the rest of my life unabashedly, mm-hmm. and, you know, having dreams where we go ghost hunting together. But I can see that with David. So, I mean, like, it's just, which artist do I like better? I love Nirvana, but the fact is David Bowie has a part of my heart.
TJ, what's your opinion?
I love both versions. That's one that's really tough. That they're about neck and neck for me. They're very different. In Kurt's hands, that song turned into something totally different, in my opinion. It doesn't, I don't think he changes a word. It doesn't feel like it even means the same thing somehow.
Yeah.
Feels very different. Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I identified that with that more. And I think we can all agree that Nirvana's Unplugged is one of the best.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
it's absolutely
ever.
One of the best.
Oh, that might have to be a future Slapnuts episode.
Oh, and you know what? We can probably do it even better because Paramount has the MTV network.
They do.
And they have 7 of the Unplugged shows.
One of them about an artist we will cover.
I think 2 of them, actually.
Two. But to whet the appetite of the audience, I will give you one fun fact. DJ, were you aware that the Nirvana Unplugged was one of the only ones done in a single take?
I did not know that.
Yep.
I feel like I think we covered that in the episode. I think. I knew that, but I don't know how I knew that.
I did know that Neil Young's was done repeatedly because he was not happy with the band.
Huh. Stanley Kubrick directing it.
All right, and what is your play song?
So that's mine, was Man Who Sold the World. I'm not going to play that one because a lot of people know that. And very similar to you, TJ, I'm going to punch up and go after the Beatles.
Wow. I feel kind of left out that I didn't choose a Beatles song.
And please understand that I have nothing against the Beatles. I like the Beatles. I pretty much grew up listening to the Beatles. However, I think one song they did well, but it was done better. I Am the Walrus.
You too?
Oingo Boingo.
Ah, okay.
Oingo Boingo did a cover of I Am the Walrus. And as we go into this, I will preface it with the lyrics from the immortal cinematic classic Roadhouse by saying, come on, Elvis. Play something with balls. So let's hear the Beatles.
So that was the original version as done by the Beatles of I Am the Walrus. So let's take a listen to...
Again, it's good.
It's good.
Yeah. No, the only thing I can just... I just have this thing in my head where it's like, yeah, perhaps we should mention somewhere in the song that a walrus is actually a marine mammal. That'd be real spangly dangly doo.
All right. So we're going to listen to Oingo. Sorry to all of our English listeners.
And our trans listeners are popping off.
Yeah. I'm sorry to the whole country of Italy. You'll hear that soon. Sorry.
Mistakes were made.
He has been duly punished. All right, so here is Oingo Boingo's I Am the Walrus.
I am he as you are me, and we are all together. See how they run like pigs from a gun, see how they fly. Stupid bloody Tuesday man, you've been a naughty boy, you let your face go long. I'm the Eggman, they are the Eggman. I'm the walrus, doo-doo-doo-doo. Mr. City Policeman, sitting pretty little policeman in a row.
Okay. So I've got to play this because I accidentally said that this was the version that he was going to listen to, which this is actually from Across the Universe.
Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Dr. Robert.
Time is not on our hands, people. Time is slipping through them. We got to transcend the bullshit. And fast.
But hey, no point butting your heads, bucking the system.
Let them get all snarled up in their dreary eye.
Never knock the way another cat swings, man.
Hate to mess with your groove, New York, but we're about 2 years out of you on the coast. We already graduated from what's been going on. To where it's going. Amen.
I am he as you are, he as you are me, and we are all together. See how they run like pigs from a gun, see how they fly. I'm crying, sitting on a cornflake.
Okay. So, T, do you actually know who did that version?
Is that Shatner?
It is not. It is actually Bono.
Yep, you too.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, weird, right?
There was something about in the talk up to it that was a little stop and start. And I thought it was Shatner, but then when he was singing, it really didn't sound like him, but I didn't have any other guests, to be honest with you. Sorry.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's, hang on, I'm pulling up my song. So,
while we're doing that, any thoughts on the Boingo version?
Yeah, I actually like it.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah.
The thing is,
I have to be honest with you, I was not familiar with
it. It's a great one, and it gets overlooked a lot, but it is, in my opinion, a superior version to the original. That's just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. That's when Go Boingo's I Am the Walrus.
You see, I really like his voice, though.
Elfman?
Danny Elfman has a really underrated singing voice.
Oh, he's great. Yeah.
That I really like. And there's like a raspiness, but a lightness to it. And it's really interesting juxtaposition. His voice is a conundrum.
He's a good singer.
Yeah, he's a very good singer. All right, so I guess my choices are, for my first one, I'm going to go for one that we've actually covered this person before. And honestly, the two songs could not sound more different. So I'm actually going with Janis Joplin's version of Roger Miller's Me and My Bobby McGee.
Good one.
Yep.
His version is very clean, very crisp, and very polished, where hers is just ragged.
But also, of course, we need to mention, written by,
No.
The great Kris Kristofferson.
Oh, my
God. Oh, that's right.
That is right. I think TJ original. TJ1 mentioned that.
I think the first time he heard Janis's version was like the day after she died.
Really?
Yeah. And I think when he heard it, he just bawled his eyes out.
My God. Like the two songs are night and day between.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just his version is pressed and clean, and hers is 3 days
Janis.
On the floor.
It's Janis. And hers is Janis.
Yeah. Janis.
Yes. And that's the thing is, she is the pearl. She is amazing. And she's not perfect. And that's what makes her perfect.
Yeah.
So.
I would also say, I almost picked a Roger Miller song. He had one called Dang Me.
Okay.
Dang Me, They Ought to Take Her Up and Hang Me. Very 2 minutes long, funny, throwaway-ish, just a little fun song. Well, there's a guy named Buddy Miller who remade that. And he stretches it out to about 6 minutes. And it is dark and scary sounding, and when he says they ought to take a rope and hang me, he means it. That man is it. You've never heard a more different version of a song, but nobody's ever heard it but me. And I was like, yeah, I don't need to get lost too far up my own butt on this one, so I passed. But that's a really good one there.
Yeah, and then, well, it's funny that you say that somebody took something that was really light and turned it into something that was very dark. For my listen choice, I actually went with Gary Jules and Michael Andrews' version of Mad World, which was originally done by Tears for Fears.
Correct.
Yeah. So let's just take a listen to the Tears for Fears version, and then we'll listen to Gary Jules' version. All around. So that is the original, and here is Gary Jules' version.
Daily races going nowhere. no tomorrow. And I find it kind of funny, I find it kind of sad. The dreams in which I'm dying are the best I've ever had. I find it hard to tell you, I find it hard to take. When people run in circles, it's a very, very mad world. Mad world. Children waiting for the day they feel good. Happy birthday.
All right, so that is Mad World, the Gary Jules version. What are your thoughts on those, guys?
It's totally different.
Yeah.
Completely different.
And the second one, in my opinion, is a better song.
Yeah, that's why I chose this as my listen. Like,
yeah.
I actually dislike the Tears for Fears version. It feels disjointed. It feels like too poppy. It feels like his vocals are lost in the mix. Not that I don't like Tears for Fears, except for that one song. They have the shittiest music video on the planet.
Seeds of Love.
Seeds of Love is terrible. It's a horrible song. It's a terrible music video. You're bad, terrible, awful humans. Anyway.
Thanks for doing Shout. We appreciated that.
Yeah. Thank you. Yep. So, the original, I don't really connect with. But there's something about that haunting melody in Gary Jules' version that feels like it was originally what the idea was that that song was supposed to be. Mm. That's what the song was originally intended to be. Travis?
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. I really do. The Tears for Fears version, and again, they have a ton of great songs, but that one, yeah, it just felt a little clunky or something.
Yeah.
The second version, it's like they kind of, it's almost like it was a wrinkled shirt. And the second version, they got out an iron and made it look presentable or something.
Yeah, but they also washed it with all the darks.
Right.
And they took something that was more poppy. And if you really weren't listening to the words, you might have thought, oh, this is kind of a happy song, you know? And then Gary Jules kind of took it, twisted it, and made it into this song that literally haunts my dreams. They've used it in a couple different things. Mm-hmm. They used it in what, Gears of War?
The promo, yeah.
The promo mm-hmm. for Gears of War. But they also used it in Donnie Darko.
Yeah.
To great effect. So yeah, I feel like that is the superior version. But wait, Lindley, I hear the people crying out in podcast land. But what about, hold on, hang on, I'm getting to that. Because collectively, as a team, I think we all can agree that there is one song in the pantheon of all music that was given to us by our great Lord Savior Jesus Christ and his son, whatever his son's name is.
He didn't have a son.
He had a daughter, right? What's her name? No. Sarah?
No, he didn't.
Dan Brown told me that he had a daughter. Okay. I listened to Dan Brown. Anyway, we can agree as a team, the podcasters, LD, TJ2 the Deuce, and Will the Thrill, have one song that none of us are gonna disagree with. And that's the song that we're actually going to close out the show. But I'm going to have to tell you my parting thought really quick. I'm shocked that TJ did not pick Hurt by Johnny Cash.
Actually, I'm a bit surprised as well.
There are a couple over the course of doing this podcast we have discussed so much. I decided to just leave those alone. That's the same reason I didn't go with Van Halen's You Really Got Me.
That's a good one, too.
I didn't go with Johnny Cash's Hurt, which I think it's an infinitely better bird, and the Nine Inch Nails version was a really good song, but Johnny's he took it. You want to talk about repurposing a song and making it feel like it means something completely different, which very few people did the way Johnny did, you know. For that matter, his version of Personal Jesus, when he sings it, it sounds like it's a gospel song.
Yeah, and there wasn't really a standout for me that you missed.
There was one other one that has, it's an all-time great song, and there are two all-time great remakes of it. And I was just like,
Dancing in the Street. That alone too. Dancing in the Street.
No. And don't even joke about that. that is terrible in every way. It's bad, wrong, and awful. And I don't ever want to hear it again. No, One by U2.
Okay.
Because Mary J. Blige's version is slamming. Love it. And then Johnny Cash's version actually makes it more heartbreaking than the original, if you can imagine such a thing.
Well, and there's also a version of Can't Take My Eyes Off You, which me and Will the Thrill both agreed is an incredible song. But it's not as good as the original, which was done, the remake was done by Lauryn Hill, and it's an incredible song, and what she does with it is interesting, but it's got too much of that flavor of the original, which was Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. Yep. And so you really can't beat him in that sense, because she really didn't transform the song. She did a great version of it, but right. It didn't exceed the original. So there are tons.
I thought you might come swinging with the little Urge Overkill. I did.
You think?
Ooh, yeah.
Huh.
Being a Tarantino fan and all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yes. Tarantino does things with music. We will maybe have to do that on Slap Nuts as well, as music from Tarantino. Like,
that's fair.
How he uses music. So you'll have to watch a Tarantino movie, Travis, and then write a book report on the music of Tarantino.
I've watched one of his movies, and I can do that one.
Which one have you seen?
I've seen Pulp Fiction a bunch of times.
There you go.
Yeah. I was actually thinking about watching Inglourious Basterds, literally.
Or, hey, Will, here's one I would be interested in your take on, because this is a person you're a fan of. How about the Lemonheads version of Mrs. Robinson?
Literally
anything Real Big Fish does is so much fun, and but it's a completely different style.
Totally.
So if you don't like that style, it's not going to be.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Yeah. Because I mean, Real Big Fish did Take on Me, which is honestly great.
I'm still reeling from that. I can't decide which I prefer.
All right. Well, to close out before my husband has an existential crisis, we heard your cries, guys. And so I think we're all going to weigh in on this. Now, if you've been a casual listener of this podcast at all, you guys know that we have a running gag. Now, T, can you walk us through how we got to this point in our lives? Because I'll bet you're wondering how we got here.
You know, when Will and I first joined the podcast, we found, oddly, that there were a lot of artists who we were not covering because they're still alive, who somehow we still mentioned a lot, like every week. Petula Clark came up constantly. Who was the other one? There was a couple that just kept coming up and kept coming up for whatever reason. And one of those was Manfred Mann's Earth Band.
Which is so weird. And it happened organically every single week.
It did. Yes, this was planned in no way. So, but we're just frequently mentioning Rush and Lulu and Petula Clark and Manfred Mann's Earth Band. So one day, out of nowhere, LD may have been doing an episode or Will or somebody, but they mentioned Manfred Mann's Earth Band. And again, not on purpose. We have not planned this. There was no thought went into this. Zero. And I just blurted out, there it is, ladies and gentlemen, our federally mandated Manfred Mann's Earth Band reference of the podcast has been satisfied. Ha ha. And then again, without talking, without discussing anything, without it becoming an official thing, we all just started writing Manfred Mann's Earth Band into every single screen. Somehow
it's we started a joke that made the whole world laugh,
and then they found us,
and then
the joke was on us,
and then haha on us. Manfred Mann found me on Facebook.
Great.
Oh,
which so, I told you when that happened, I'm flattered, I am also frightened.
Now, to be fair, we have never insulted them.
We never have. We've in never fact we love way. I love Manfred Mann, and I've loved them since Doo-Wah Diddy. Like, I am a massive Manfred Mann in all iterations of Manfred Mann, from Manfred Mann, Manfred Mann 3, or Manfred Mann's Earth Band. Like, all iterations, I love them. I'm a fan. And the fact is, they actually took one of the, and then we might get hate mail, I don't know, but they took one of the arguably crappiest songs that Bruce Springsteen ever put to paper and made it a friggin' art piece.
I will take the position of not only a Springsteen fan, but a New Jerseyan, and I will say, yes, the original song is schlock. It is not good. It did not work. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah,
it's very much like the difference between the two versions of Mad World you played. His is disjointed and just, it's just a mishmash of stuff, and I really don't like it. It's hard to believe somebody as talented as him put that out, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so right now I'm gonna actually play a little bit of the Bruce Springsteen version just so you guys can hear it. I'm really sorry. And then we'll come back and close out the show. All right, so here is a little bit of Blinded by the Light by Bruce Springsteen.
Thank you. spend the summer with a teenage diplomat. In the dumps with the mumps as the adolescent pumps his way into his hat. With a boulder on my shoulder, feeling kinda older, I trip the merry-go-round. With this very unpleasing sneezing and wheezing, the Calliope crashed to the ground. Some old hot hat shot was it for our spot, snapping his fingers, clapping his hands. And some fledged wild mascot was tied to a lover's knot with a whatnot in her hand. And now young Scott with a slingshot.
Right, I think that's enough.
That was a gracious plenty.
Now, I will also say, as a Springsteen fan, I am a firm believer that his sophomore outing was much better than this, his first album.
I mean, fair.
The Wild, the Innocent, and the E Street Shuffle is so much better.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I've listened to that.
You can't compare?
I can't. I have nothing to compare it to.
TJ, what's your thoughts?
I still think to this day, Little Pink Houses was done by Bruce Springsteen.
And I've tried.
It was not. That was John Mellencamp. No, I completely agree with you. There's a steady ascension through his first several albums.
Just like five albums, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anybody have any parting thoughts?
Yeah. Almost every remake of a Bruce song is better than Bruce's.
And I specifically tried to find examples where that wasn't the case. I did find an interesting one, though. The classic Because the Night was originally done by Patti Smith.
Redone by 10,000 Maniacs.
Well, no, redone by Bruce. And then redone by 10,000 Maniacs.
Which I actually...
But now, I think Bruce co-wrote that one, I believe.
Well, I would argue that his version's actually better than the original. And personally, I like the 10,000 Maniacs version the best.
Yes. I do too. Yes, I completely agree with you.
I actually listened to the 10,000 Maniacs version the other day on my walk.
That's another great unplugged.
Still holds up.
That unplugged is fantastic.
She is such an incredible vocalist. Natalie Merchant is incredible. One of her songs, I believe it was from what is the album called? Might have been Natalie Merchant. But Wonder.
Wonder's a good song.
Yeah, it was on something like Tiger Lily or something.
Tiger Lily, that's it. Yes. I can remember the cover. It was like yellow and orange and it had her face.
It was just her.
That was just her. And there were colors around her. But that album was incredible. And then the song Wonder is a standout. That's like my go-to karaoke song, like in the middle of the karaoke party. It's never the closer. It's never the opener. It's always somewhere in the middle. So
I want to say that was the theme of my wife's high school graduation or college. One or the other.
Interesting.
That was like their big, that was their big song. But I mean,
not These Are the Days. I'd be surprised.
I would just tell you, like, the band's version of Atlantic City crashes. It trounces Bruce's. For that matter, country artist John Anderson did a remake, and his is better.
No, I go with the original on that one. I stand by
And Bruce's isn't bad, but Charlie Robinson doing Racing in the Streets is better than Bruce's, and the Mavericks doing All That Heaven Will Allow better than Bruce's. But here's my point. It sounds like I'm
crapping on Bruce. The state of New Jersey is going to boycott this podcast.
What I think I'm really saying is that Bruce is an amazing songwriter who is so gifted in crafting songs that pretty much they can be adapted to anything in the American canon. Hard rock, country, bluegrass, R&B. I think that's the mark of a really truly great songwriter, you know. But there's a lot of remakes of Dylan songs that are better than Dylan's. But again, I think that speaks to how good Dylan is.
Yeah.
To me.
But Bruce has a little Stevie. There's that.
Yeah.
Yes, there is that.
Apparently I've met him. I've worked with him.
Also, it's late and I drank a lot today. So,
That is all our faults.
I regret nothing.
All right. So we are going to get to the best version of Blinded by the Light, which is by Manfred Mann's Earth Band.
Who's gonna do it?
Seriously, why don't you do it, Will?
Okay. him. Ladies and gentlemen, the Manfred Mann's federally mandated. I shouldn't do it anymore.
Okay. All right. Why don't you try it and see if you can get through it? Because we've been doing this for about 9 hours now.
I tried.
Ladies and gentlemen, the federally mandated Manfred Mann's Earth Band reference of the Rock and Roll Heaven podcast has now officially been put to bed and satisfied.
Hey.
There it is.
All right. So our socials, if you want to send us hate mail because you love Bruce Springsteen.
Because you, and frankly, you're probably gonna.
I mean, That's fair. You can wander over and support the show at patreon.com/rockandrollheaven. You can check us out at Twitter at rockandrollLT. Our Instagram is rockandrollheavenLT. Our Facebook, rockandrollheavenpod. And seriously, guys, go over there and enjoy the fun that we're having over there. We got inside jokes. We've got, you know, posts that not are about dead people, but we do have posts when someone does pass, so you can keep up and know who unfortunately passed. It's not all gloom and doom over there. It is actually quite fun. Our website, we're still not saying it, and you can email us at rockandrollheavenlt@gmail.com, and make sure, please, to check out all the other awesome Pantheon podcasts at pantheonpodcast.com. And don't forget, you can still get 15% off your entire order of Tiesta tea at tiestatea.com and put in the promo code rockheaven15 at checkout to get 15% off. We love you guys so much. Travis, do you have anything to say to the audience?
I do indeed. Bye, buddy.
All right, Mr. Will the Thrill.
To that, I say thank you and good night.
All right. So make sure that you guys check us out next week. I know that we're probably in the middle of something, but I don't even know when this episode is going to come out or what's it's probably. You know what? Here, it's a safe bet to say this. It is a safe bet to say this. Hey, guys, check us out next week where we'll be continuing our series on Michael Jackson.
I say that with every that episode.
Probably
yeah.
A safe bet. It's either that or Alice in Chains.
Right. It'll be one or the other.
It's one or the other. I'm pretty sure, though, it's Michael Jackson. Probably Michael Jackson. So, but what we're going to do is something that we've never done, and that's actually play Manfred Mann's Earth Band. So you guys, from all of us here at Rock and Roll Heaven to all you guys out there, just remember, the light at the end of the tunnel may be blinding. Good night.
Thank you. another runner in the night, blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night, blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night,
in the dark with the monsters, the eyes, and bumps, and wrapped up like a douche, another runner in the night, with a border on my shoulder, being the kind of owner I'd trap a douche.
God touch is gonna make it through the night.
92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only. Right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.